of a group of churches that does that, right? There's this greater thing going on around the world. And our little corner here in Worcester, Ohio, is a part of it. We're part of what God's doing across the planet. And I think that's awesome. Isn't that awesome? Yeah? All right, I want to be sure 9 o'clock's awake. You guys with me? All right. I think it's awesome. And that's why we're doing this series. We're reminding ourselves in a series called For the World about what we're doing around the world, that we are engaged and that you personally, individually, we're learning how you can be engaged with what God is doing to reach these unreached people groups all across the world. And today is a special day because today is the way that each individual or each family in this church can get engaged in something to make a difference. And today is what we call Compassion Sunday, and we're going to talk more about that in just a couple minutes. We're going to get into it. But I want to remind you guys, maybe you're new, maybe you haven't been here in a while, and maybe you're coming back from a summer, and I want to remind you of what we're doing and what we're learning about in this series For the World. We're talking about our global impact, and we're talking about the roles in missions. We started this series looking through the book of Acts and seeing how the Holy Spirit modeled this movement of missionary work, being sent from one place, your hometown, to go to another place, a new language, a new tribe, a new nation even, to present the gospel, to share the hope that they had. And we saw this pattern in the New Testament, all throughout the New Testament, with these key four roles in missions work for the world. There are missionaries. We know that, right? Missionaries are the sent ones. They're the ones that the Holy Spirit puts a call on and says, I'm setting you apart to go somewhere else and to go bring this message of hope to a new people, a new language, a new tribe. So that's missionaries, the sent ones, the ones that leave their home to go to another place. And we talked about sending churches. In order for us to send missionaries, there has to be churches that say, we're going to train you, we're going to pray for you, we're going to commission you, and we're going to support you. We're going to send you from where we are, and we're going to be a part of what you're doing over there, wherever it is. And so we talked about the importance of sending churches. We saw that all through the New Testament story, that's what they did. They would send from one town and community to go to the next. And we read about Paul, Barnabas, you know, many in the New Testament that left and were sent. And they had churches that commissioned them and sent them out and sent them off. And then we talked more about the things all of us can be a part of, which is being spiritual encouragers. That there was the church in Philippi that continually wrote letters to Paul and sent resources and continually like showed him that they're for him and with him. Missionary work is hard. All the missionaries I talk to, like, they talk about all the battles they go through. When you move with a family, with kids, taking your kids, could you imagine taking your kids to a brand new place where you barely knew the language and went grocery shopping, right? A simple thing that we just do, even though some of us, like going to Walmart is like a mission field, but like some of us, you know, like going shopping and not knowing the language, how much more difficult that becomes. So there's even just cultural pressures, let alone spiritual attack, because they're taking on territory the enemy has owned for generations, years, or who knows how long. And he doesn't want to give it up that easily. And so they're going into lands and places where there's actual physical harm that can be done to them. So they need encouragement. They need people sending them letters saying, we're praying for you, and continually connecting with them. And the last one is investors. We saw that Jesus himself had a group of ladies that followed him that had means. And they provided and took care of financially Jesus and his disciples on the missionary journeys from city to city. We saw that example. It's like Jesus could have just made money, right? Like he could have done that, like he's Jesus. But no, he showed us a model. And then the Apostle Paul, back again with the church in Philippi, they financially supported Paul so that he could focus on mission. So there needs to be financial investors, which is eternal investment, right? You want your dollar to go to heaven? That's how you do it. You invest in kingdom work. You invest in the gospel being spread. And that's when that happens. Because everything else, there's no U-Haul behind the hearse, right? We're not taking anything with us, but people. People matter. People matter. And so missionaries, sending churches, encouragers, investors. And so we're learning for us individually, what is your part? What is your part to play? Last week we got to hear via video from our two missionaries that we support, Kevin McGee and David and Stephanie Connell. And that was encouraging. I hope that was encouraging you to hear what they're doing and on the ground. And we had many of you sign up to start getting their newsletters, their email newsletters, to become encouragers for them. If you didn't know about that and you want to jump in and be an encourager and Find out what's going on with our missionaries. You'll see on your Connect card. If you look on the bottom of your worship program, we have this thing called the Connect card. On the back, there's a new checkbox, and it says, sign me up for updates, for missionary updates. If you check that, give us your name and email, and we will get you into their newsletter so you can start hearing about every month what's going on with our missionaries. And then our encouragement to you is to be an encouragementer, all right? So to encourage them and email them back. They don't get that often. Like when I talk to David, he's like, we don't know if people are reading them. We don't know if it's like nobody really replies. And because I know when you get a newsletter email, you're like, Reddit, delete, you know, whatever. Or sometimes it might be save, or sometimes your inbox has 4 trillion things in your inbox. If that's you, you need help, all right? You need somebody to help you and figure out how to use email. But hit reply and just say, hey, thank you for the update. We're praying for you. And even just send them a verse of encouragement. That like 3 senses may be the thing that God uses to get them through that day. You never know what God would do with it. So let's be a church that's full of encouragers. Let's encourage our missionaries on the ground. So mark your Connect cards and help us take that next step. Well, today we get faced with some realities that hit me. It was the fall of 2017. And I was invited to go to the Dominican Republic on a Compassion Vision trip. Compassion International does this for pastors and leaders and to show them, show leaders what they do all across the world. And I'm friends with Brian Weber, who actually now is our executive director for Converge Mid-Atlantic. At that time, he worked for Compassion International. And Brian invited me, said, would you come along with us? I'm like, that would be awesome. I've never been, you know, to the Dominican. I've never been to Haiti or any of the islands down there. I'd love to see it. And so I went down and took a trip and spent a week with a handful of pastors. And there were things that wrecked me, things that I had never seen before, things that that opened my eyes to poverty. I mean, we have poverty in the United States, right? And it's true. We have people who have genuine needs. But when you go to another country, it makes our poverty look like wealth, right? And that's what broke me. And there's some stats and some things, and so we're gonna talk about this a little bit this morning. There's some stats that were from UNICEF that Compassion International talks about across the world. Some things that I think for us as Americans we might not be comfortable hearing, or for us it's really hard for us to understand these things because of where we live and the things that we have and the conveniences around us. But around the world, it's not that great. There's a third of our planet that's struggling big time, that lives and struggles in poverty. Here's some stats. About every 30 seconds, a child dies of malaria, which is a preventable and treatable disease. They shouldn't have to. Like, there's an easy treatment to solve that. But every 30 seconds, a child dies from that. An estimated 101 million primary school-age children worldwide don't attend school. They have no way out of their situation. They have no way of getting education to learn what it could look like in their life. They're just there, and they're just living life in poverty. About 2.5 billion people live on less than $2 per day, making them extremely vulnerable to natural disasters, illnesses, food shortages, or instability of any kind. 2.5 billion. I mean, these are numbers that, like, we can't fathom, right? It's hard to fathom that number. It's just crazy to think about when we think about our whole world living on 2.5 billion of them living on less than $2 per day. There are 22,000 children that die each day due to conditions of poverty alone. 22,000. Now, I'm going to try to help us understand at least that number. The other numbers are so big, it's like, I can't wrap my head around it. 22,000. The population of the city of Worcester is 26,000. It'd be like almost the entire population of Worcester dying every day. Wow. I mean, does that kind of hit you? That kind of brings it home to me. Like, when I was thinking about it and working on this message, I'm like, wow. God, what is going on in the world? This is crazy. 1 billion children, nearly half of the world's children, live in poverty. Hundreds of millions live in extreme poverty. 640 million children live without adequate shelter. And there are 1.1 billion people in developing countries without access to clean water. I mean, something that we're just spoiled with. I don't know how many faucets I have in my own house, and it's good water, right? How many faucets in this church building? How many faucets do you have in your house? Boom, you can open it and drink it. There are 1.1 billion people that cannot do that. The water they drink actually makes them sick. And yet, they have nothing else. And so they live in this perpetual just sense of poverty, of brokenness, of pain. These are hard realities, aren't they? It's like, what in the world is going on? Why does this exist in this planet? It doesn't make any sense. We live in the wealthiest country in the wealthiest time of history. And yet, this is real all across this world. There's something not quite right here. Something not quite right. It's interesting, when I was in the Dominican talking to them and talking to David and Stephanie, who just moved there about 6 weeks ago, you talk to people in these developing countries where there is these realms of poverty. It's interesting, in the Dominican, if you go to the coast, you have these beautiful, you know, tourist sites. I mean, you've got like beautiful resorts. I mean, absolutely gorgeous. And people travel down there and they experience like, this is awesome. This is beautiful. And the thing is, that part is, and that's great. And then you go like two blocks behind that, and then you see this, right? You see the poverty and you see the hurt. Now, talking to the locals and talking to some of the compassion staff, I'm like, how do you kind of wrap your head around that? Like, here's luxury and like crazy next to poverty and brokenness. And they say, here's the thing, though, we need you to come. We need people to come because tourism is our main source of income. I mean, tourism is their main economy. So without that, then it would be devastating for the entire country. And so they say, no, come, enjoy. Come here, because that supports these families. Even if it's people going down a lane and somebody buying something small from a shack, like that one purchase can probably take care of that family for a week. And for you, it was like just a couple bucks, you know? So I'm like, man, how do you wrap your head around that? But the other problem is there's so much corruption in these areas. I mean, the government's corrupt, the police are corrupt, everybody's corrupt. So if you have money, you can pay people off. But if you want to actually have things happen in a right way, you have to have money, or you're not going to get justice. You're not going to get what should be done rightly. I mean, we heard from last week from David, you know, they shipped their car from the United States down there in a container, and then it's out on the ports, and they were hoping that they possibly could get their car back, because you never know. Do you have enough money? You talking to the right people? Like, all that kind of corruption. And they prayed, and God opened the door, and they finally got their car. Some people never get that, right? Just corruption. So you wonder, what in the world are you doing, God? Like, where are you in this? Why is this happening? And what is God's heart in these situations, in these circumstances? And that's what I want to talk about this morning. Where is God in this? And then where are we in this? What part do we play in helping actually be a part of the solution to the problem that's going on around the world? I need you to know that God is there, and God is present. We're going to read a few verses, and if you have your notes, I have some fill-in-the-blanks this morning for you to fill-in-the-blank on your programs, and you can take notes. And as things hit you, I would always encourage you to just take extra notes. Like, that's why there's blank space on there, so you can write down your own things as God kind of speaks. You're like, wow, that kind of hit me, or you feel like God's saying something very specific to you. I would encourage you to write that down, and then go back to it later. And see what the Holy Spirit was doing to speak to you in that. In the Old Testament, in the book of Isaiah, chapter 10, we see God's heart for those who are poor. Actually, we see God's heart against those who are corrupt. And this is what it says in Isaiah, chapter 10, verses 1 through 4. God is just blunt. I love it whenever it's just very direct. And it's like, you don't have to like figure out what he's saying, like he's saying what he means, right? And so this is what he's saying in Isaiah. He says, "Woe to those who make unjust laws, to those who issue oppressive decrees to deprive the poor of their rights and withhold justice from the oppressed of my people, making widows their prey and robbing the fatherless. What will you do on the day of reckoning, when disaster comes from afar? To whom will you run to help or for help? Where will you leave your riches? Nothing will remain but to cringe among the captives or fall among the slain. Yet for all this, his anger, God's anger, is not turned away. His hand is still upraised. Wow. I don't know if you've ever been like warned by a parent, right? Like, you better, you know, like, that's his picture. See, God is angry at poverty. He's angry when people are corrupt, when people take advantage of people in the lower position. It ticks God off. He says his hand is upraised. I mean, he's ready to smack you, right? He's ready to take you down if that's you, if you live that way. And I'm telling you, it's not going to be a good day for those who live in that land of corruption and take from and withhold justice from those who are impoverished and who have need that they could do something about. Like, wow. So the first point is this. I need us to understand the heart of God in all this that we see across this world is this, is that our God is a God of justice. Our God is a God of justice, okay? And it may not seem like that in the world we live in. It's like, but that seems unjust. It seems like the world is unjust. Broken people do broken things. Sinful people do sinful things. Lost people do things to hurt other people. And there is evil in this world. There are corrupt, evil people that are greedy, they're selfish, they care for no one but themselves, right? And one day, they will have their justice, is what Isaiah is saying. One day, they will be before God, and he's going to say, well, where's your help now? Where's your wealth now? Where's your power now? It's gone. And now you're in front of me. This isn't going to go well, right? Like, that's what God is saying. Like, God's heart breaks for those who are poor, who are in poverty, those who are oppressed. God's heart is there, and he will bring justice. Sometimes it's in our time. Sometimes it's while we live, and sometimes it's not till the end. But I just know God will be a just God, and God will show justice to those who have been oppressed. And he will raise them up, and he will lift them up in his presence. But those who are unjust, those who are wicked, those who prey on and rob from the fatherless and the poor and those in poverty, oh, they're going to have their day. They're going to have their day. It's not going to be a good one. So God's heart, number one, is that he is a God of justice. He's going to do what's right. And he's going to make sure that that happens. Now, he's not only the God of justice, but we see that God has a heart for those who are in poverty. There's over 500, I think it's over 550 verses about God's heart for those who are poor. 550, that's a lot, just so you know. Like, that's a lot of scripture about God calling the Christ followers up, calling what his heart is for those who are in need. And we see that God's heart isn't just for justice, but in Leviticus chapter 19 in the Old Testament, when God was teaching the Israelites, I mean, the Israelites were God's people, but they were clueless in a lot of ways. You know, when they came out of the land of Egypt, he gave them the Ten Commandments, top ten, right? And those Ten Commandments were all about how do you relate with God and how do you relate with others and how do you do that in a way that honors God, right? And then he continued to give them these rules and laws because, I don't know, maybe they just weren't that smart, you know? Like, they just couldn't figure some things out. And so we see have these whole books of the Bible that are all these rules and laws, like, okay, this is what I want you to do. But in those laws, we see God's heart for people. And in them, in Leviticus chapter 19, we see God's heart for those who are in need, those who are poor. See, there were times where those who had much or had land, they would go out and harvest their fields, and they would fill their barns, and they would take care of their families and even their servants and all that kind of stuff. And when they would do that, God said, now here's an extra instruction. And this was the extra instruction in Leviticus 19. Verses 9 and 10 says, when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings, which is the leftovers, of your harvest. It's that stuff that they didn't get on the trailer, right? You've seen the fields like that. There's some corn left over. He says, do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God. So when he ends a sentence like that, that's like, pay attention to what I just said, right? He's like, I'm God telling you to do this. I'm God saying, take care of the poor. Take care of those that don't own the fields. Take care of those that are from other lands that are traveling through that need help because they don't have anything. Take care of them, the foreigner and the poor in your community, and let them pick up what's left over in the field. Let them harvest that corner over there. Let them pick up the grapes that fell on the ground or those that you didn't see, and let them be provided for. So what we need to understand about God, he's the God of justice, but God made a way for people because he's the God of provision. He's the God of provision. So many scriptures about generosity in scripture, right, in the Bible. And we see that our God is a generous God, isn't he? I mean, a God that gives his only son that we may be saved, like that's pretty generous. And we see that heart for us, his generosity over us. There's a passage, and I don't have it in your notes or anything, but in the book of Matthew, I believe it is, where Jesus is encouraging the disciples and people listening. He says, don't worry about stuff. Like, don't worry about where you're going to eat, where you're going to sleep, what you're going to wear. He says, look at the fields. Look at the birds. Like, God takes care of all of them. And they don't have a need. And don't worry. God will take care of you. Instead, he says, store your treasures up in heaven. Because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He's saying, treasure the kingdom of heaven. Treasure God's things. And all that other stuff, he'll take care of you. He'll give you what you need. I know in my own life, our own family's life, there have been many, many a time and season where we had nothing. I have a picture, and I found it the other day, of our refrigerator that had a half gallon of milk and ketchup, and that was it. I wanted to take a picture of that moment because I wanted to be reminded, okay, God, even when we had that, we ate that day. I don't even know what it was. We didn't go without anything. And we had young babies at that time. It's like, God always provides, always has, and he always will. And our God is the God of provision. And here's the thing, he asks us, those who have much, to bless those who have nothing. And that's his way of being generous through you. Man, he wants people to be a conduit of his blessing, a conduit of his resources in the world. See, the problem with global poverty is not God's provision, it's human distribution. Did you guys hear that? The problem with global poverty around the world isn't a lack of God's provision, it's a problem of human distribution. We live in a country, I don't know if I want to go there. Yeah, I'll go there. Ready? All right. I mean, we do. We're so spoiled. We live in a country where we have so many things. 85% of people who have two-car garages can't park their cars in it. Why? Because it's loaded with stuff. Isn't that crazy? Right now, half my garage is full of stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's guilt, right? Like right there, I'm feeling guilty. I'm like, ah. So does that mean I should clean it out so I can park my other car in it? And then I feel like I have more cars, and it's like, ah. So it's like you can like be overwhelmed with guilt, and that's not the point, okay? I'm not trying to overwhelm us with guilt. I'm just trying to like paint a picture of reality. It's very interesting that, you know, one of the stats I just read is, I want to actually look at it. 640 million children live without adequate shelter. 640 million children don't have a proper place to live. In the United States, the storage unit business is a $38 billion industry a year. We spend $38 billion to store our stuff that we don't have room to put in where we live, and yet there's 641 million children that don't have a proper place to stay. Do you see the, like, what is going on? The problem isn't provision. The problem is human distribution. The problem is the wealthy get wealthier and the poor get poorer, and we live in so much comfort and blindness. And I think so much of that blindness is, it's not, I say that blindness is it's ignorance. And ignorance isn't a bad word. It just means we don't know what we don't know, right? And we don't see what we haven't experienced. And I would encourage you at some point, if you can, at all possible, go somewhere where God would wreck you. Go somewhere where you can see some people that have way more need than you, and see what God might do to help you be an active part of helping those people. That's why as a church, when I came back from the Dominican, I said, we're doing something. We're going to be a part of this somehow. We're going to be part of making a difference and investing as a church somehow to help be a part of the distribution of the resources that we have. I think sometimes the problems and the numbers and the stats, they seem too big for us to make a difference in, right? They just seem too big. And if there's one thing I've learned is that when something's too big for one person, it means that we need to invest in whatever the small is that we can. Because when you get a bunch of people doing the small, it turns out being pretty big, doesn't it? And so we as a church have engaged to help solve this problem in one region, in one community, in one town in the Dominican Republic. The small village, it's not really a small village, it's a village. It's a coastal community that's beautiful on the coast. It's beautiful. Resorts and all sorts of things. But one step back, there's this place called, I think it's called Burrio George or something like that. And it's where so many of the people came who were very, very poor, trying to find jobs in the plantations and sugar mills. And in this community, these families live in just absolute poverty. I mean, you know, it is like the metal shacks and just living day by day. What can we get? And then in the middle of this community in La Romana, Dominican Republic, there's these churches that are doing God's work, and they're preaching the gospel, and they're partnering with Compassion International to develop these compassion centers. These compassion centers, I love what Compassion International does, because their mission is to be a part of God's justice and God's provision. I mean, that's what they're all about. Their partnership, this is their mission statement. They want to release children from poverty in Jesus' name. That's what they do. They partner with the local churches in that community and local churches in the United States to get involved, to invest in that church, to create this center where kids, children from that community can come and have a way out, to have a way up. See, we think poverty so often is a physical problem, but I'm telling you, poverty is actually, it's a mental problem. For so many of these kids, they know no other way of life. They don't understand that there could be anything different. They haven't been educated. They haven't experienced anything, but this is just life. And so they live in this cycle, generational, which is over and over again. This is just how it is. There's no way out. Well, when these kids come to these compassion centers throughout the week, they see there could be something different. They see they can have hope in a way that they didn't have hope before. Man, I had so much fun going to these centers. We went to 3 different centers in the Dominican when I was there traveling, and one was all wrapped around music. And I'm like, oh, this is my thing. Like, this is awesome. And they, like, brought these kids off the streets in one of the toughest part of Santo Domingo. And so these kids would either be drug dealers or prostitutes or fill in the blank. That was the destination. And they bring them in. They teach them how to play instruments. They teach them how to sing. They teach them how to do, like, pantomime and, like, skits and dramas. And that was a hard day, man, for me to be sitting there and watching these kids on the stage doing this drama. And I'm just sitting there, like, bawling, trying to hold it together. As they're doing a drama about Jesus, and I'm looking at where they live, what they're experiencing, what they're going through, and I'm like, God, wow. And the joy that they have in their hearts, the smiles they have on their faces, man, I wish I could just take it home and just live next to those smiles every day. Because they found something. They found hope. They found a way out of poverty. And so many of these kids got to know one of the drummers who grew up in that program in Santo Domingo, and he came to know Christ, and he helps do worship at the church, and he's actually going to college, become an instructor and a teacher in the high schools. And he would have never had that path up out of where he was if that center hadn't been there. I'm like, they are doing it. God's justice and provision, providing a way out for these kids to experience Jesus, to have their physical needs met, to have a meal throughout the week, and to learn something so they can continue to grow and have a place to be productive in the community. It's an awesome program. It's awesome what they do. And the accountability that they have is just, it's just a great organization. I was proud of our church because last June, over a year ago as a church, we stepped up and we said, we're going to get involved in this and we need to sponsor some kids. And we had 54 kids that need sponsors that time last year. And in one Sunday, we sponsored 54 kids. They all got a sponsor. So our church family, just so you know, you have kids in the Dominican, in La Romana, that I'm hoping some of us, we're going to go visit them. The fall of 2020, our goal is to go down to the Dominican and take a mission trip. And whoever wants to go, we're going to go to that compassion site. We're going to go to that church, and we're going to bless them. We're going to meet these kids, And as a pastor, for me to be in a circle at a church where I know my church that I'm a part of is helping 54 of these kids in this room up out of poverty, woohoo! Right? I'm like, that's awesome. That's awesome. One of the children that we sponsored, our family, his name is Angel. And we have a picture of the child that we sponsor. And Angel was, he was on the priority list. A lot of the older kids aren't as cute, so they don't get sponsored, right? And Angel was the same age as our middle son, Nat. So he's 14, 15 years old. And so we've been sponsoring him the last year and writing letters to him. Every month, writing a letter to him and him writing back. And as he writes back, you can kind of hear the joy as he gets to write back to us. But also hearing his story, I'm like, God, I'm grateful that we can be a blessing in this kid's life. He's had to move from his dad's house to his grandparents' house to another family's house. And he's just being kind of tossed around. And sometimes he can go to church and sometimes he can't, depending on where he's living. So he's like all over the place. And he gets to go to the Compassion Center. I don't know if he gets to go all the time or not. But I know that we're speaking Jesus into his life. And he has opportunities to get a way out. I know he helps his family. And I think the latest letter was that he's selling roots. I don't know what kind of root or whatever. But on the street, he's trying to sell some roots to make some money to take care of his family. And just the power of that relationship. Because it's not just sending money to a kid on a picture. Like, it's about relationship. I want to know what's going on in his life. And I want to know how we can encourage him and bless him and be a part of his life. It's interesting, some of you who have sponsored and you sponsored kids, I really want to encourage you, please be writing letters to your kids. Please be writing letters to your kids. I when I was down there, it was pretty powerful seeing the folders. Every kid has a folder in the Compassion Center, and in that folder, they keep record of every single thing that kid does, everything that kid receives, every note and card and letter that shows up, every dollar amount that comes, if there's extra birthday money that shows up, they take that money, and they write down exactly what every single dollar of that money was spent, and all of that information's in that child's folder. I'm like, wow, you guys are really detailed. Like, can I hire you to come to our church and help us, right? Like, they're discipling these kids, and they know what's going on in their lives. And when they open up this folder, and then they show the letters of what these kids are sending back and forth, and then they open up another folder, and there's like only one letter in that kid's folder. And the center leaders there, they're like, these letters mean more than anything else that this kid ever gets. And every time these kids receive a letter, it's like this precious gift, and they take it home, and they sleep with it, and they go share it with their parents, and it means the world to them that somebody wrote them. It gives them hope and encouragement. Here's some stats on that. The sad thing is that 30% of the kids sponsored don't get any letters. Oh, I don't like that one. 80% of the kids that do get letters say they feel more motivated because of the letter. And 100% of the parents of these kids prefer a letter rather than a financial gift because they know it means that much more to their kid. It's a relationship. And that's what I love about Compassion. We're not just sending money and then feeling good about ourselves. Like, we want a relationship. We want to know what's going on, and we want to encourage these kids to help them have a way out. Now, in 2017, when I was able to go, just so you know, I got to see the accountability. I got to go to the Compassion office, the main office in the Dominican. I saw all their offices. I saw all their structures and systems. I got to see their finances and see how they handled them. And the thing with Compassion International I love about is that 80% of every dollar that we give goes to that kid. 80%. That's a high number, just so you know. Only 20% goes to all the administrative things that need to happen, like translators in those offices to rewrite the letters so that you can read it in your own language. I don't know how many of you know Spanish. I know none, right? Maybe there's a color or a number one, right? Then I'm good. But everything else, I'm like, I don't know what he's saying, but it's probably good. So they have to hire these translators to translate for them, and all the financial end as far as just being sure the administrative stuff between all of the individuals, the sponsors, only 20% goes to that. There's many organizations, just so you know, where it's the opposite, where 20% goes to the actual mission and 80% goes to either the CEO's back pocket or it goes towards just the organization and the busyness of all the people they've hired. I'm glad to have an organization like Compassion, where I know who has high integrity, and they do things right, and they do it the right way. They do it in the right way. So I'm encouraging us as a church, because today we have the opportunity to continue in that journey. And some of you who haven't been a part of our church, and maybe you weren't here last year when we did that, you can start sponsoring a child and be a part of somebody's story of God's justice and God's provision. Now, I want to show you a video real quick, and I showed this a year ago, but it's a video from another church up in Canada that went and experienced exactly what I did. And I want you to see on the ground and see the kids and see what God is doing in the Dominican. So go ahead and watch this.
They don't feel defeated. They don't feel worthless. They don't feel that this is all that life is going to give them.
I'm really humbled that I get to be part of a church family that sees the benefits to helping others.
Compassion, they believe in releasing children from poverty in the name of Jesus. And they're doing it.
The three things that I love about Compassion that really make them unique is that they're church-based. Everything they do works through the local church to empower the church to reach its community. They're also Christ-centered, which is very unique for this type of a program. They are all about connecting kids to Jesus and seeing God be the determining factor in rising them out of poverty. And the third thing is their child-focused. My money doesn't go to a group or an organization or a community. It goes to the one child to build him or her up.
We got to visit three different projects, one from each of the programs that Compassion is made up of.
Compassion has this amazing program where they work with women who are pregnant.
The Child Survival Program.
They teach them on nutrition and hygiene and then what to do when their babies are actually born. A lot of these moms said before being involved in the Child Survival Program, they didn't even have dreams. But since they've been in the program, they've learned how to dream again.
One of the other projects we visited was centered around the child development sponsorship programs. With these kids, they're being developed not just in the physical aspect, which everybody thinks poverty is just about the lack of material things that somebody has. It's more of a mindset, the mindset that, you know, I'm not worth anything. This is as good as life's going to get. Compassion's program works with these kids in different areas of their lives to work to break that cycle of poverty.
When we went to home visits and you walked into these homes where you barely could all fit in or there was no parents' home, it wasn't so overwhelming because the hope of Jesus and the hope of what Compassion is doing was stronger than the devastation and was stronger than the sadness and stronger than the depression. And so that was something that was incredible to see.
In the beginning, I sponsored because I thought it was a good thing to do. It would provide my sponsored child with the things that he or she needed. The kids don't know that you're sending money. That's not what's important to them. What's important is receiving your letters every month.
The best part about going to visit my former sponsor's house is when I asked him if he still had all the letters that I had sent him, he beamed and ran to his room and brought back just a stack of letters that my family had written to him.
I sponsor now because I know that I can be this voice of light, of life, of hope, and of love into this little boy. And just let him know that he's cared about by somebody across the world. And
you don't need to travel all the way across the world to make an impact. It starts by going out into the church foyer and finding a child that you and your family can invest just a little bit of money into every month, and then writing letters and speaking into their lives. It's so easy, yet it's literally life-changing. Compassion is accomplishing incredible things across the world, and we have an opportunity to be a part of that, to see poverty be eliminated one child at a time.
Pretty awesome seeing what God can do that with, honestly, such a small investment on our part. It's well, I'm just going to offer the opportunity for us as a church to step up. talking to our the compassion leader for our area and district, he got a hold of me last May, and he said he asked if we'd be willing to sponsor more kids at the same center. And I said, well, how many are there? At that time, he said there might be about 50 more kids that need sponsored. I'm like, wow, 50 kids. And I said, all right, let's pray about it and let's see what we can do. And so we've been talking back and forth about that for a little bit, and I got to meet him at a conference I was at and talk to him a little bit more about it. But what ended up is that there are 30 kids that still need sponsored in the center that we already sponsor 54 kids. And so my hope is that as a church that we can step up and sponsor all 30 of those. And so we're going to take that time to respond just a little bit. You're going to, if you want to do this, and I'm going to give more instructions, you'll see 30 pictures, actually 29 because I already grabbed one. So there'll be 29 pictures of kids right out there in the lobby hanging up on the wall. And as you look at the kids' pictures, sometimes God kind of stirs in people's heart like, this is the one. This is the one I'm supposed to help and build a relationship and sponsor. And sometimes it's just, I'm going to go grab one. And no matter what, I'm just going to ask you, if you're able to, grab one. Start that relationship with one of these kids. I was proud of our oldest son, Grayson, because I felt the call, like, we should sponsor another. I mean, we have means, we can do it, we're financially, like, it would be easy to do. Like, and so it's not even a sacrifice. I'm like, well, is that enough then, if it's not even a sacrifice? But I felt like we should sponsor another kid. And so I was going through the packets on Friday and got to the very last packet. And for me, it was like one of those God moments, like, this is him. You're supposed to sponsor this one. And as I looked at the picture, I don't know if you know our son Grayson. He's about a foot taller than me and like a beanpole, all right? So like that's how he's wired. You know, he's just this tall, skinny kid. And then I look in this picture, I'm like, this is Dominican Grayson. Like, he's just this tall, beanpole, skinny kid who was born a month after Grayson. He's the same age as my son. And I know where he's living, and I know what he's experiencing. And I went home and I actually talked to my son Grayson, and I said, would you sponsor him? Would you be the one responsible for him and writing him letters? And it was about a 2-minute conversation. He says, yeah, I'll do that. And he was like, so do you want us to like pay for it? And he's like, no. Like, okay, that's awesome. And so he's sponsoring him by it with his own money, with his own allowance, and he's going to write him letters. And so I want to encourage all the young people in this room, you can do it too. Wouldn't it be cool if you had a brother or sister in a different land that you get to go visit at some point? And so I'm just encouraging, whatever it might be, whoever might do it, the cost is low. It's $38 a month to sponsor a child, to provide them all that they need in these centers. Now, those of you who have already sponsored kids, I'm not making you feel guilty to go, okay, now you go get another one and get two more, or you're going to hell. Like, we're not doing that, all right? That's not how it works. But what I want you to do is just pray about that. And those of you who haven't sponsored a kid, and maybe for you financially, like, actually, it would be a stretch. It would be really hard for us right now. Then don't do that, okay? We're not pressuring you to do it. If you don't have the means, don't do it, okay? You can respond by being an encourager, right? You can be the ones that write letters to our missionaries and those kind of things and still be involved in what we're doing around the world. Don't feel guilty, okay? I don't want you to feel guilty with that. But for those of us who can, and those of us who have the means and have the time to build a relationship like that, once a month, taking 20 minutes to write a letter to somebody, that would mean the world to them, literally would mean the world to them, can be a small investment for just a huge impact in that community. And so after we're done here, you can do that. You can go out. There will be pictures hanging up on clips, and you can grab that picture, and you're going to take that picture to the table that's sitting there. Jess will be there, and she has the packet for that child. Each child only has one packet, okay? So that's the only packet that exists for that kid. There's not other packets at other churches or anywhere else. That is that kid's packet. And so you can then fill out the form, and you don't have to pay today. You can fill out the form, and then we will mail that and send that back, and then you get to keep the picture and the rest of that packet. And start that relationship. And there's instructions on how to do that inside those packets. So if you're willing to do that, that would be your next step this morning. And you can do that there. If there's not room to fill it out there, you can use the cafe and those kind of places to do that and to respond. But all I know is that God's challenging us. He's challenged us to continue in this solution, being a part of the solution as we are living for the world. See, compassion, it's not just a feeling, right? So your last fill in the blank. Compassion always has a corresponding action. If you're moved with compassion in a situation, it means you probably should do something to be a part of it. And that goes with any relationship, right? That goes, if you have compassion for somebody that you're next to or close to, what's the action to move into that? And for us, you know, this compassion, if you feel moved to it, act, give, and be a part of what God's doing. See, Ephesians 4:28 is a challenge to all of us. It says this: anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work. Now listen to the heartbeat of working, okay? This is to the Christ followers. It says, but they must work. Why? Doing something useful with their own hands, that they may have something to share with those in need. Like the call isn't so that they can collect and have more of what they want. It's work, earn, you know, be a hard worker so that you can bless others. You can show the character of God in generosity. And that's what the chance and the opportunity we have. Now we're going to respond. We're going to take some time, let God continue to speak to each of us. And we're going to respond in worship. And we're going to sing the song we sang earlier, Reckless Love. Because when we think now about other people who have needs in the world, when we think about compassion, I want us to let that be on our hearts when we're singing and worshiping to God as we respond. And so would you all stand with me as we kind of take this time to respond and worship together? God, I pray that you would move us with compassion, that we would be a church and a people. I already know we're a generous church. We're not rich. We're not wealthy. We don't have means beyond, you know, beyond what we have. But God, you have blessed us to be generous. You have blessed us to give when we can. And I pray, God, that as a church, that you would lead us in this time of response, that you would help us to see the one that is lost, to be moved for the one that we're supposed to be involved in and build relationship with. And God, if it's a child to sponsor, that we would take that step today, because we know that you ran after us, the God of justice, the God of provision, the God of love, and you're running after others, and we want to be right behind you in that process. So just lead us as we respond and worship this time.